basically, anybody that wants to call themselves a cipher can hang up a shingle. There is supposed to be a system of taking tests and getting a smicha called the Tzav Kabbalah, but generally speaking, it's pretty much hefker. Many of the issues that are in Safras can usually be found later on, or it could be at some point or another discovered that the cipher wasn't so good. When it comes to batim, it's a whole different story. Once a pair of tefillin is black, there's usually no way you could tell the difference between one type and another, between a kosher one and a possible. I'll go through just quickly, we don't have that much time, to go through quickly the seder, how batim are made, the difference between different types of batim. Just that if you hear something, someone's out in the parasha marks batim, they should at least understand the words that are thrown around. Most people have no clue what they mean. A lot of times people selling it have no clue what they mean. Just understand the basic concepts of batim. There are three types of batim on the market. There's pshutis, dakis, and gasis. Pshutis, if you have them, get new ones tomorrow. Pshutis are basically origami tefillin. It's made out of either one big piece that's cut up and folded up. The ashitis hold that it's kosher. The day shall be lismach, but usually doesn't last for more than a very short time. There's limited amount of ones that are made properly. There are a lot. You go to Amazon, you can buy a whole pair of tefillin, $150. Prices went up recently, I think $180. But you get with the box and the parachutes inside, and the ritzus, and even a free tefillin bag, all for roughly under $200. Those are pshutis. Those usually are not meant for everyday wear. Dakis is what most of the world used to wear. Chabad is pretty much the only one from the regular firm world that still wears it. But Moshe Feinstein himself was very pro it, as opposed to the gasses that we have. I was just mivar not long ago by Reuven Feinstein of what Moshe Feinstein's concerns were, and most of the problems are not around in the gasses that are made today. Dakis are basically made out of a behemoth daka, usually goat. It's very thin. I have dakis and pshutis and everything just to show dakis, this is how thin it is. It's they put in filler pieces afterwards to make it strong. You could squeeze in between, you can manage to squeeze it, and then the extra pieces added in to stiffen it that you should be able to hold the shape. Also on dakis, to get a mohudah pair of dakis, it costs almost as much as cheap gasses, so they basically were phased out because of gasses. Almost everybody, the average normal firm person, is wearing gasses. Gasses are a relatively new invention. About 140 years ago, Rinsana Tufolansky was a cipher in Eretz Yisrael. He invented the method of making of gasses. Gasses comes from behemoth gasa, from an older cow or bull. And it comes from the forehead, the cheeks, or the neck of the cow. It's much thicker there. It's much more pliable. It's easier to work with. Now, because it's such a new invention, and World War II came out smack in the middle while it was getting popular, Chavetz Chaim had ordered film from him and famously never got them. The Munkacher got film from him. A lot of the Gedolim tried getting from him. But because the war came out in the middle, things are thrown off. There's very little in halacha about how to make gasses. Most of the poskim, if you read Mishabru, you read Rishonim Achronim, and you try to compare it to what you see on how to make gasses, there's a lot of disconnect because there's a whole different method of making it, and the metzius is different. Also, because right after the war, they had to start making a ton of batim for all the refugees, all the people that came to Eretz Yisrael. So they just started mass producing, and a lot of things got incorporated into it that were never cleared with halacha first. And it basically, like one of the Gedolim from right after the war, he said in the Tshuva, he says, there's no such thing as a minig by gasses, because no one asked the shus before they incorporated. Somebody had some shtick that he thought would be a good idea, he did it, and his friend copied it from him, and he told it to his talmidim, and it basically got incorporated into it. It wasn't until around 30, 40 years ago that Rabbi Yashiv had the Dov Morgenstern, who was a Talmud Luvik in Batim, go out and write a whole Sefer Zichron Elio, which is almost like the Mishabrua on Batim, and he had to go through all the sugyas from Dakis and Pshutis and try to incorporate it into Gasis. Now, once a pair of tefillin is painted, like I said, you can't tell anything underneath it. When I learned in Eretz Yisrael, there was a bacher in yeshiva with me who came from the city Berditchev, and when he and whoever was mekarif him by his bar mitzvah gave him two pairs of tefillin, the Rasher and Beinatam, and before his chasendo they gave he gave them it to be checked, and the sefer said his Beinatam tefillin did not have a stitch of leather in it. They were straight epoxy, and no one's ever able to tell the difference. Once it's painted, the bottom epoxy, when it hardens, it has a yellowish look, and it looks the same as batim under certain circumstances. And he was wearing for years. The Baruch Shem was only having a time, not as Rashi. But there's such a musik, and I've seen some of the things that I'm going to show you some things as we go on. Now, most people that go to buy tefillin, they don't know anything about, not about the parashas, not about the batim. They go to their sefer, and they hope they're trusting their sefer. They're obviously going to someone that they trust. And they assume the sefer is getting something for them. The parashas often you can see that, and it comes to the batim. They assume the sefer looked into it and is getting from a reliable place. I write. I've been writing long before, I've been writing parashas long before I got involved in batim. I remember when I first started writing parashas, so I wanted to sell batim also. It's easy money on the side. I'm selling the parashas, I might as well get the guy the batim. And I went to an older sefer that was mentoring me, and I said, how do I sell batim? I don't know the first thing about it. So he said, you have to find like three different types of batim and different price ranges. And each one of the guys will give you keywords what to say. And you say, this one's Yibur Regal, this one's Yibur Yad, and this one is like this, and it's like that. So they pull out the shin like this, they make the shin like that. It sounds good. Then hopefully the guy will be just as confused as you, and he'll buy it, whatever you push him into it. And it didn't sit well with me, but that was the only I tried, and that was all I was able to do. And for years, I kept, every time I met a batim macher, there were very few batim machers in America, people making batim. In America, usually a batim macher just means the person who puts the parashis into the batim and closes it up. And there are very few batim machers in America, now there are much more. But at that time, there were very few, and I would call people in Eretz Yisrael, I would try to, whenever someone came to America, I'd meet a mashulach, he used to work in batim, I'd go, I'd make him crazy. I couldn't get too far in the what's going on. Seven, 8 years ago, David Stark, he has a place by Rabbi Pinkus' Tiferes Tam on Coney Island, and he makes very expensive batim. And he once came to Lakewood, and he said that he called together all the seferim, said, leave out my business right now. I said, I can't even sell batim. He has very expensive batim. He said, you go into shul and ask five people in a row, how much do you pay for your batim? One guy just say 200, next guy 500, next guy 700, next guy 1,000, next guy 2,000. He said, what's the difference? All of them are going to say the same thing. It's Avoy Desiyad, it's Prudus Agamri, it's the Shin is Moshech Biyad. I'll explain what all these mean afterwards. But everybody uses the same things. It doesn't make sense that a $200 bias and a $2,000 bias all have the same terminology. So he pulled together a whole bunch of stuff from the Lakers. He said, I can't sell my expensive batim if no one knows the difference. Let me try to educate you a little. He tried, not much atzlacha, but at least we got a little bit of the concept. And after that, I've been working on it for a long time. At some point, there was a tumult with Ritzus, and 5-6 years ago, and there was a problem with batim also. And someone connected me to batim machen Eretz Yisrael, who's one of the biggest mumchim in the world when it comes to making batim, halacha, physics, chemistry, painting, how to take care of the ibud, all around geniuses in these things, the Bevicha Mizrahi, and I got very close with him. Pretty young fellow, but he's a genius in these things. And at one point he realized that the matzav in America is a bit not so good. And so he offered to come one day in his manum to America. We got together a whole bunch of seferim, 3 weeks straight, 6-7 hours a day. He taught us from A to Z. We learned a lot, but still, to the extent that a year or two later, I went to Eretz Yisrael with him. I went to Eretz Yisrael, he was there, and he took me around to different factories. He took me into one factory and said, this guy has all the problems, ask all the questions he's supposed to ask. I asked all the questions. The guy gave me very satisfactory answers, and he warned me for this is low quality, in low halacha, low everything. And at the end, I told the guy, show me your batim, show me the hidurim in it, show me the quality, and he was showing me, and I walked out, I told him, I'm hooked on the guy. The guy, Mamash, has a good product to sell. Years later, not so long ago, I looked over those pictures that I took and videos I took over there, and I could see straight out all the issues. But even then, when I knew book smart, I was a bit book smart, but it was impossible for me to differentiate between one and another. So, at some point, the main batim factory that most of the good seifer were getting from lost its hechsher, closed down, lost its hechsher, it was the whole tone back and forth, and people were getting desperate for the batim that we wanted, and the cheapest bias above that was $200 more, and I couldn't convince people to go and jump $200. A guy bought a phone last year, and I told him this year the batim at $200 more, and a lot of seifers were a bit desperate, some seifers going down, and a lot of seifers going up, but there was a big... The people going down were selling batim that weren't always so good. People going up felt bad that they're making people don't have money get a more expensive bias. And it was me and a few friends of mine, we were calling up everybody in the show, try to track down, this factory is a good, check out the Rav Machshir, and this place is a good. Until Rav Mizrahi told me, enough's enough, just open your own factory in Lakewood. So eventually we opened our own factory. I don't own it, I manage it. He came in, till Corona, he was here 3 out of 5 weeks a month. Every 5 weeks he's here for 3 weeks. And Baruch Hashem, we trained him. We have 5 people working there. And we're able to now have much more, obviously, understanding of batim. I can understand all the things I didn't understand. Now, I'm not here to sell my batim. I myself sell many, many different types of batim, my own private thing. I'm just here to discuss the different types of batim. And please don't ask me questions about a specific batim, a specific seifrim, a seifrim, because a lot I know that I'd rather not say. So, okay. There are two types of batim categories that they call it. They call it private and factory. Now, everybody basically, like I said before, claims the same thing. Everybody does the ibud, when they tan the hides, when they take the raw hides and they put into the chemicals. Everybody does that lishma, and everybody does all the presses that they do only with avodis yad, and everybody does this avodis yad, and everybody does that avodis yad, and everybody has no glue over here and no glue over there. The metzius is not like that. Don't start from the beginning. If you want to make life very simple, if you're buying a factory bias, buy one that has a Badatzaveh, the Charedis on it, and you can go home and you're finished. If you're not, then there's a little more than you have to know. The Badatz is not the best when it comes to Hashkacha on Batim. It's the best Hashkacha on Batim, but even there, they have a lot more to get to. It's almost impossible to be a real Hashkacha on Batim to say 100% that there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And I could vouch for that myself in my own Batim. The Badatz has a Milo that people are petrified of them, and if someone double crosses them, they're going to get the guy back 100 times over. Most of the factories that have a Badatz usually have a few other Hashkachas, and if there's any issue, they just downgrade it to one of the other Hashkachas that the Mashkiach shouldn't cash them on anything. Most of the other Hashkachas are not worth anything. They're a stamp, and that's it. Now, that's the... If you're getting just Badatz, you could go home and show them like, so the other option is to get from private. Private is usually much more expensive, B'derech Klal, and private generally does not have Hashkacha. It's a one guy in his own backyard doing it, and you have to, there's usually just a trust relationship on it. And I'll just explain all the difference between it. In a perfect world, the way it used to be, private batim meant it was one guy. He would go to the shlachtos, take the iris, go home, do the ibud himself, do all the presses himself, form it himself, do everything himself, down to the ribua himself, paint it himself. By many of them, they even were makpid that they put the parashis in themselves also. That was the way it used to be. That was in a perfect world. The factory usually just meant it was assembly line. There could be as many as 25, 30 people working there. Usually one guy knows, each guy knows their own job, and each guy does it. Now, both of them have miles, and both of them have concerns. Factory does not have to mean that it's less avodas yad or less mohudar or much of a noticeable quality difference. It's usually the difference between factory and private is the way it's made. To the extent that most private batamachers make between 1 and 7 pairs a month, and there are factories out there that are making 2,000 a month. So it's just a bit of a merchuk between how it's being made. Okay, I'll just go through the pros and cons of each one before I even explain how we get to making them at the nafkaminas. Every piece of leather is different. And just, I'm jumped the gun a little, a shoroish starts off like this wide, which means that each piece of it, each bias of it, could be of a different consistency. Could be taller, shorter, thicker, stronger. when one person is doing all the stages from beginning to end, they baby the bias. They know this bias was weaker on one side or stronger on the other side. It had a very weak spot over here. And as they go through making the bias, they could play with it that it should come out as well as they could, both in hiddur and in quality. Also, they usually are using much better oyers, much thicker oyers, which has a better quality, because they work on it each. What a factory does, to do like three or four steps in one shot, they'll split it out over three or four steps separately, and they work on each part, which is why they're only making four batim a month as opposed to 400. For those that are makbid on knowing who made the tefillin, who wrote it, and who took care of the batim, obviously by a private person, it's much easier to tell if you want to meet the guy or know who did it. Nowadays, there are a lot of the private batim makbid that outsource, because they're making more, or for whatever the reason is, maybe we'll get into it later, they do outsource a lot, but usually, generally speaking, they're going to outsource a trustworthy private guy, is going to outsource to somebody that sees eye to eye to him on all the issues. What's the cons of it? No one, he's only making four batim a month. If one of them gets a hole in it, that's a quarter of his month's pay, salary. And sometimes, if the guy's not 1,000% there, look, there could be, he could pass it through. Or if some of it's kosher, just not as mahudr as, $1,500 buy should be, he could pass it through also. You have to trust the person, and you have to hope. There's also, like I said before, there's no ashkacha on private, almost none of them. Like 97% of them have no ashkachas. And even the ones that have ashkacha, usually the mashkiach trusts him enough that he only stops him once in a while. He's not actually there to do it. When it comes to factory, there are pros. In a good factory, there's a good set of standards and a good system, and there are some of them that have very good systems that were set up. You can have people that are masters of their stage that they do, and they, instead of being a jack of all trades, they know their part very well. The quality could be just as good. I remember when I first started, I asked a guy who sells a lot of batim, fixes batim, a famous person in America. I asked him, what's the difference between private factory? A customer wants to know. Will anybody ever know the difference? He says, no one will ever know the difference. Except someone who knows batim enough that he can open up the batim and say, these are plain, these batim. But most people never know that. He said, the only difference he could think of between, talking about, he said, when the factory is as good in hashkacha and everything as the private, the only nafkamina will be if you have a kid who has a tendency to bang his head into the wall, and bangs his corners in, or dents his bias. On a private, you could fix it 2-3 times. On a factory, you could fix it 1 or 2 times. And it's usually a kid like that will end up banging more than 3-4 times. It's not going to make a difference. But generally speaking, the person who's wearing it, if it's made right in a factory, in a good factory, will last just as long as the private one. The good factories have good ashkachas, and they have good systems set up. The big pro of it is especially ones that are making 100, 200, 300. Most of the very good factories aren't making the thousands, but they're making often in the hundreds. If there's a problem with your bias, or if they have a problem while they're making, it's much easier for them to throw it on the side and go further. This is 1 out of 300. It's not going to make a difference. What's the cons of it? There are a lot of people involved in it. Each guy who knows his own job, and I've seen this many times, that person who knows his job, he doesn't realize that what he's doing is going to mess it up for the next guy. And especially when there's a lot of people involved, they kick the can down the road as far as they could. And I've seen, I've seen batim at different stages coming from factories. The one like, why, how come don't fix it? Why should I fix it? This guy working on it after me, let him fix it further on, which again, might not be a problem at the end of the day if it's fixed in the correct way. The fact is that since it's a factory and they're mass producing, they have to be mevatered on one of three things. They have to. It's or else it'd be private batim makers. They have to either be mevatered on halacha, on quality, or on the looks of it. Now, no one's mevatered on the looks, or else they can't sell the batim. So it's a choice of quality and halacha. Now, even when they are mevatered on quality and halacha, doesn't mean that it's a no good bias. It's just that's what they were mevatered on, and it's not as spitz as the private ones. Now, the awesome factories are mevatar in both. And halacha is out the door and quality is out the door. As long as it gets sold, they don't care about it. The last issue, which is only in some factories, a lot of these places do not pay a lot. Some of these batim that are sold in America for $400 were sold for 400 shekel originally and went through four hands until it reached the seicher and the price kept getting bumped up. 400 shekel on a bayis, when you have 15 workers or even 10 workers, these guys are getting paid bavkis, and they usually, it's an in-between job till they get something better, and then they're out as soon as they find a better paying job, and they have to train the next guy, and there's never a mumchus, the person never becomes a big mumche, and even his one stage that he's doing it. The average length of time by a good bayis that takes to make is on the short side, between three or four months. Three months is cutting it short. It's usually on 4 months for a period filling, from beginning to end. There's roughly 8 hours of work that's done in that in those 4 months, if you set a timer. The good ones could take 2-3 years. They're just drying it in between stages a lot. They're not working on it daily. The longer it dries in between stages, the better quality it is. Now, just a friend of mine once walked into one of these cheaper factories in Eretz Yisrael, and he was on a Thursday morning, and the place was empty. So he asked the manager, like, what's going on over here? He said, oh, they finished all the tzon. They did in 7 days. They did from Sunday to Friday, and that week they all finished by Wednesday. The tzon were started on Sunday. If you ever want to know if you have tzon like that, if it's open or you take a good whiff, it smells like dead fish, you know you have one of those things. If it doesn't dry out, it's just rotten. Rotten, or I have one here, I think, that might have that smell if anyone wants to check it out. Okay, so the reality is that's the difference, the basic difference between the two of them. I'll try to get some more differences later, maybe. The reality is that most seichrim across the world are not getting from very good factories. There's not that many good batim made a month to supply all the people that think they're getting good batim. And many of the names that I know, there are batim that sold in New York under a certain name, or there's several of them, and there's no such company in Eretz Yisrael. It's a middleman along the way made his own, you know, his own cases and put a sticker on it, or made his own sheet and with hashkach on it, and they never happened over there. Okay, now just to know what you're getting involved in the batim, on average, on a factory bias, there's around 16, 17 people that are involved from the beginning to the end. So now you're trusting all these 16 to 17 people that there's not a tremendous amount of halacha. Once you know the system, things can run smoothly as long as you know where the red flags are. But there's a lot of people you're trusting, and not all the people, especially in some of these factories that are just hiring people off the street, literally. Not all the people know that much. So, batim, how about batim made? Generally speaking, the best oiris of batim come from Wisconsin. They come from Wisconsin, they're shipped off to Eretz Yisrael. They do the ibud over there. There are different types of ibud. Everybody does ibud that's avoid the siyad. There are different types of ibud. The better people, they do ibud, called the ibud bar. They put it in big containers. If you have time afterwards, I can show pictures of it. They put it in big containers, and it doesn't get mixed up. It sits in the sieve. That's a lime whole mixture. A lot of the ibud nowadays is done with synthetic materials, which speed it up and sometimes make the batim more shvach. There are the other ones that do it with, I don't know if you ever saw pictures of it, these big huge drums on a chain that turns. Some of them are done by electric, some of them have a guy sitting on a bike pedaling it to move it. There's one or two places that have a guy on top running that has a track that he does it. But they're all different dargis. Some of them are considered...
Do it yourself? Is that a hook? Is that a hitter?
It's better to do it yourself. We've been trying to get to do it. Right now I'm getting my rough ones. I get it from Eretz Yisrael because we can't find a place. The stink could knock out a whole block. In halacha, if a person is a borsiki, his wife could divorce him. The Piskei Tshuva says that if it's for tefillin and mezuzahs, for cloth and batim, then she can't. So I'm safe so far. But right now I'm not. We're looking for a farm. We're looking for some place. We're looking for some. Don't know. We had the one place. The guy let us do it. Then he was scared to attract animals to take care of his livestock. We're still looking. If anybody has a place in the backyard here, I'll pay rent. The smell is...
You also have problems with vegetables.
It's health. There's dealing with inspectors. The crumb, yeah. But right now, I'm still getting from Eretz Yisrael. We'll keep on looking into doing it in America, but we didn't get to it yet. Like I said before, the gases are made just from the head, from part of the head. Now, they used to ship it salted, used to ship it salted because it goes by boat to heavy. A lot of the places don't like when it's salted because in Hilchos Shabbos, Melicha is considered the Ibud, and the people salting it are usually the guy in Burger King or McDonald's plant where they get the heads from. It doesn't have to be a shechted as long as it's a cow. Now, most of Adon, from the good Ashkachis and the good Batim, they're sent frozen, which the salting ruins the or also for the Ibud. They have to wash it, and they put in these huge, almost like a washing machine, to get out as much salt as possible. Now they send it frozen. This is also one of our big problems, because you get it frozen, even for in America, from Wisconsin, they ship it frozen. It has to sit outside for 3 days to defrost, to thaw, and you have blood and guts all over the place, and nobody wanted that in their neighborhood.
You don't have a problem with cracking?
With what?
With cracking.
With the oil is cracking?
Yeah.
No.
Not when it's frozen.
Not when it's frozen. No. When it thaws out into a beautiful...
As long as it thaws out properly.
Yeah, okay. You know too much. Okay. Okay. But after the defrosted, they in Eretz Yisrael, the big places that do it, they have these machines that scrape off all the fat and all the junk from the bottom of it, and then it's washed off, and then it starts to ibud. They put it into these pits that are into the pits or into the big drums, each place according to how they want to go with Avodas Yad. The Rambam holds you don't need ibud l'shma and batim. He holds you don't need ibud, therefore you don't need ibud l'shma, and we pass him that you do need ibud l'shma. We pass him that if you somehow find batim that the ibud wasn't l'shma, mishbur comes out and a lot of places come out, you put it on without a bracha, but if that's the only one you have, then it's cut into rough shapes. So like I said before, the shal rosh starts off more in a T-shape, the shal yad starts off pretty much in a regular rectangle, and then it goes into the rough stages. They, what it's called, the first stage, the first part of it, is called the bulka. Why? I don't know. But that's what it's called, the bulka. They slowly, when it's in a T-shape, I'm only talking about the standard batim. If you have time, I'll get to the fancy batim, the one without folds and all these other types. They slowly push out, very, very slowly, they push out and they thin away from in between where the batim are. Until it takes not a very long time. They just push out over like the course of three presses. They press it like three times. After that...
Leave it in the press?
No. The maximum bias is left in the press is usually like 5 minutes. On one type of making batim, sometimes if you left, they do it on a hot press, and then they can't take it out until it cools off. So when I do it like that, I just have fans blowing on the press to cool it off, and as soon as it cools, I take it off. That's the glue, type of glue they use.
You don't leave it in like stretch.
No, now the presses, the different types of presses. The old-fashioned presses, what they call the press borig, it's the old twist press like they used to have in the wine presses. It has a big screw and you turn it, and that's what, when you first started making, all the more expensive private batamakas still use that. There's no hider in that over the semi-hydraulic according to any of the paiskim. But that's the old, commercial cost of, that's the way they used to make batim. Most of the factories, the good factories use a semi-hydraulic. Semi-hydraulic is basically, as you pull down the lever, it goes with it. I know my press, when I got it shipped in from Eretz Yisrael, when I first started, the hydraulic wasn't working. We were able to, with the ear of it, we were able to slowly able to get it down. But it's mostly Koyach Gavra, and it's the person will hold, that's considered regular Avodas Yad. Then there's the fully hydraulic. If this time I have a video of it, you just have to sight to see. It looks like a guy's driving a tractor. He just boom, 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 he has a whole bunch of levers, and the thing goes up, goes down, closes, opens. They polish it through. I was watching the guy, he went through bias after bias after bias after bias. And the time it takes me to do one, he already did 50. These presses, the twist presses, the old-fashioned presses, they put a decent amount of pressure, and those they have to leave it in much longer for the pressure to push the skin into the right place. The semi-hydraulics, it could go down to like 20 tons. We don't use usually more than 2,000 pounds maximum of it, but all you need is a few minutes. Now, when you start working on it, the way I get it from Eretz Yisrael, I get the Shorosh looks like this, the Shiyad looks like that. These are the Simonim from the Bedatz, from the Ashkacha. These are hard as rock. We'll have to show and tell later. You can't bend these, you can't do anything with these. We get it like this. As you see, the whole all the excess that was in between is folded very neatly into the base, the titura, right? When you look at film, it looks like one nice smooth black thing. It's really made out of a nice folded up thing. Now these are rock hard. They have to be soaked for different months or different lengths. Depends on the season and the humidity and everything with it. It's soaked and then it's wrapped in a bag so it could steam up a little for hours. And then it goes into the press. Now, when they do the press...
You don't boil it.
No boiling. Now, when it goes into the press, there's one goal, like I said before, since the starts are so far apart, each piece has its own thickness and strength and height. So there are different ways how to do it. This is the quick way. There are pieces, the press, let me describe the press if I don't have time to show pictures. The press is a press, has a thing coming down that puts all the pressure on. There's a metal, solid metal plate, and there's something I'm called the dowel. The dowel is made out of Merkava tank steel. You can barely lift it, it's solid. It's made precise at 90 degree angles with a whole bunch of twist things on the side that you need a 50 pound wrench to close. You're putting this in there. I mean, you want it to come out, you want as much as possible that all four of the bottom should be identical in height, in inside should be the same, in the width, everything should be identical. Now each one start off different. How do you do that? So there's the easy way and the hard way. Just to get it off my head, I'm going to say the easy way. Okay, when you make the batim, there are these, by the Yerushalmis, they call it the eisens, by the other Israeli ones, they call it the barzelim. These little cute pieces, they come in, they go into one into each compartment. This holds it that when you're pressing it together, the whole thing inside doesn't get smashed. From the outside of it, and the outside, is a whole set of pieces that go. This is roughly the way it goes. We take mechitzas, what they call it, metal pieces. One goes between each bias. We usually bang them with a hammer. Now, there are sets. Each one comes with 8 posts like this and 4 squares like this. Each one, I have dozens of sets, each one with a different number with measurements. You're putting one post between, corresponding to each bias, in front and in back. And then you do it in the back also. You put one of these on top of each one. And then when you press the whole thing together from all 4 sides, it squeezes it, and because it's wet, you can move it, and the pressure pushes it that each one should technically come out as thick as this, and this will be pushed down the same amount from the top, and you start getting the rough shape of a bias, which after the first press ends up looking like this. You ready? Start getting the shape of the bias. Now, from these bulkus, as they call it, I make a better quality ones, I get from the most expensive of the factory style bulkus. From these bulkus, you can technically make a $500 bias or a $1,000 bias, depending on the work that goes into it. Now, because each bias is different, before, at every stage that we're doing, the guys are standing there with the calipers and they're measuring the depth and they're measuring the outside and this way. They're measuring a whole bunch of things, making a whole bunch of cheshbonos. What's the best size, the tzara shava, that's going to work to make this bias nice, and sometimes it's trial and error, you have to try a few times. Which is one of the things that takes so long to make a good pair of batim. And then there's always the times in between when the pressure busts the bias and there's a hole and then it goes into the garbage. That's the boring, proper way to do it. In the shoyad, which just has one hole, there's just one fat thing, also tons of sizes of it, that goes, when it's hard I can't get it into it, that gets pushed into it, and the same thing, it gets slowly pushed down. This is what it comes out. This is after already 2 presses down the line, but it already has a nice shape of a bias. This is the hard and complicated way. You have to know a little math, and you have to have a little patience to figure it all out. Sometimes it doesn't go the first time, you have to do it a second time, third time. What's the easy way? Instead of having, I have in my place, buckets and buckets and buckets full of every different size of these things, there's a very simple mahalach. You get one size, which is a drop smaller than the average bias. they take what we call shtoid, what comes off the ribu machine when they trim it down, or when they ever you cut down batim, they grind up into dust. You fill up the inside of the batim with it. You put in a piece that's smaller. You put it in, you put the pressure down, and whenever you hit too much pressure, you stopped. And the dust that's in it, it's not sawdust, it's high dust, whatever you want to call it, whenever that when it stops the thing, so that helps form it, and you can form a bias pretty nicely. The downside of it, I remember I was once by one of these project awarenesses checking people's phone, if Eva's wearing the right place, and a guy comes over to me, said, "No, I just bought a new pair of tefillin 2 years ago, very expensive." Well, for him, he thought it was expensive tefillin. And it looks like the paint is on top is cracking a little. I said, "It's not cracking, it's crumbling." And I did like that, and there was no more top to the tefillin. So I never saw something like that. You know, so I called up a friend of mine who's involved in tefillin. He said, "Yeah, what happens is they when you stuff in the dust, from the pressure, it gets stuck up there. It has the same color as from the friction and sometimes this heat, it fuses together. It has the same color as the bias, and later on, when they do ribua and they're slowly slicing off the top, usually bottom like that end up before ribua, one higher, one lower, all crooked. The guy doing on the ribua, look at that later, but he's taking off a lot, and he doesn't realize that he already left the bias and he's only in the dust, and it looks beautiful. He takes it off, gives it to the painter, he paints it up very nicely, and then sometime down the line, it crumbles. I've seen a few times in Lakewood, there was one guy, a bacher, had it. The cipher was able to pull out two parishes from the top, straight up. That's how little it is. If you want to know, we do use the dust when we have a dent. Let's say over here, there's a dent, and I want to push it out, so we fill up this part over here with dust, and we press down with that. I usually put like a piece of material or something on it because I don't want to get stuck to it. This is what it looks like afterwards. There's no water, no glue, no heat, no anything. Just from sheer pressure, it turns into a cracker, a matzah. This could hold. I did experiment once. One of my workers didn't believe me that you could really do it. So we took a bias, had a big hole in it. We loaded it with dust, and it held beautifully. You would never tell the difference. Possible. You'll never tell. You'll never know. I'm saying unless it crumbles. The guy himself who's doing the ribua, he does a chav. He doesn't know where to know. Okay, that's the first press. The basically how they do the first press. Again, the guys are doing good with the remote controls and everything. They do dozens a day. I was watching them do it. They just flies through. And on the first press, they also pressing around on the, again, just for those who don't know, this is the ksitza. The top is called the ksitza. This is called the titura yoina, and the bottom part is titura tachtaina. By the first press, they press down the titura yoina also, because the whole dalet, the brace that it's in, presses down very heavily around here also. And then afterwards, they do a separate press on here, so that it ends up looking like this. This is already straight. Here it's relatively straight. And at the bottom already have their pretty strong shapes. Not perfect. The corners aren't always out, but it's perfect. After that, the next day, when it's still slightly wet, they do a second press. It already starts getting a nicer look. The corners are usually much nicer. The second press they'll do over and over until they have nice corners. So usually after that, you have no chance of getting a nice corner from the press alone. Now, after the second press, they let it sit and dry. It has to dry out. Now, this is, if you notice, a slightly interesting thing. It's drying inwards, which when it's done right and dries inwards, it helps the bias later on that they don't open up, that the natural pressure of the batim are facing inwards. After, in a regular, normal place, at least 3 weeks, they go to the third press where they do it all again. Usually the pieces inside and the piece on the outside, since the bias shrinks from drying, gets knocked down in numbers. Then it goes on a hot press. The hot press is to seal it in. And then after that, each batim macher has their own seder, how they go about doing it. They'll make the, what we call the kippel, to fold the batim in half. That's done by wrapping felt, wet felt overnight around the bias and putting in a special press that pushes it closed and makes a very nice, it's harder than it sounds, just to make a very nice crease over here. And then there's another whole mahalach how to do it to get it open, to open and close. Because once it's dry, at this is done before, this is done after it. When you have one that's done before, I don't know if I have one here, it's impossible to open. And usually when the sefer has to put the parshas in, it goes in no problem. At some point, either before or after they do the folding, they do the shin. Now the shin is a whole parsha with snaps. According to the Sfaradim, the Beis Yosef brings down, the shin can be made with chakteiches. I've explained chakteiches. Chakteiches is simple terminology. Take some ink, pour it on a piece of paper, scratch out a whole bunch of ink till you're left with a black letter over there. Chakteiches is the way we write, basically, is you're creating the letter by itself. You're not taking anything away, you're creating the letter.
Stencil,
yeah, okay, depends on, we'll keep it simple on that. Now, in the Rishonim, there's machlokes in the Rishonim if the bias has to be black at all. Ritzus, Halacha Meshim Yisena has to be black. The bias, Tosis brings down, a lot of Rishonim brings down, that there are two ways to make the shin. Either, again, they were using dakis in those days, and dakis was basically a wet piece of cloth, was soft, pliable. They put it on a form that had three slits in it to make the four batim. And like when you put a tablecloth over a table, there's leftovers in the corner. You used to pull that around to the side and use those folds to make the shin itself. So Tosis and a lot of the Rishonim say either do that, or you have a white bias, take a black marker and make a shin on it, and you're good. We are chai shur shittus that the bias has to be black also, and therefore you can't make a black on black shin. It's not going to work. So what do we do? In the dakis, since it was very soft, what they did was, there's a hard piece in here. Between the hard piece and the soft skin, they would put a cutout of a shin when it's wet, and then just smooth it down around it. And if anybody learns Mishabrua, and Mishabrua makes it sound like tfus is not a problem, Mishabrua is talking about such a tfus. If you look in the Macarius where he's bringing from, there are a lot of places called such a tfus where it's a press from the back and a press from the front and squashing the R in between and you're left with the shape, that would be fine according to a lot of places. Fine. So the way we make the shin, the bias is rock hard when you're doing it. There's no way you can do it. You can't just put in a press and press it out, press in and leave the shin out. That's mitzvah teiches. You can't put a press in the back because it's rock hard, you can't fit a press in to push the other way. So how do they do it? So there are a few different mahalchim. Like I said, Beis Yosef holds that chokteiches is not a problem, and the Sfaradim, a lot of Sfaradim are b'chlal not makbid on it, which someone has to keep in mind, again, from the Sfaradim batamacher, and this has happened in Barapak, the Chassidish guy who was selling batim from Erlich, of Sfaradish batamacher in Eretz Yisrael, who got a psak from his Rav, you're making batim, you're Sfarad, you don't have to be makbid on it, and he's selling it to the Chassidim for double the price that he got it for. And he's selling tzulim that apostle for Ashkenaz. We're makbid on chokteiches. So how do they do it? So basically, in short, the way we do it is, it's a slightly complicated system, but it's the only way we can do it. We make the shin sides over here and over here, make a wet with a little piece of felt triangles overnight till it's nice and soft, the skin puffs out. Then we have all these. We have these pieces that have backwards shins carved into it. They go on it like this. You put it into the press. You take it out, and you have a beautiful shin that's puzzle. It's called teiches because the skin was puffed out. You're pushing it in, and the only thing remaining is the shin that was indented over here, and that's puzzle. It's called teiches. Why do we do that? Because we're going to do presses on it again afterwards to make it look nice. We have to make sure it's in the right place. Otherwise, when you put it back on, if you shift it or drop, you're going to knock off the shin. After that shin is made, we outline it in red. Some people color the whole thing red. If you ever see a tefillin that's white, you can see it over here, I can show it to you afterwards. They always use a whole bunch of different colors as they go. There's no... People think, oh, is there a din? You have to use red first and then green. No din, just red is the easiest color to cover up, and green goes on top of that, and blue goes on top of that, and then a dark purple goes on top of that if you ever have to go so many stages. We make it red. We put it back in the press with the flat side till it's totally flat. The places that have a good mashgiach, they're busy checking to make sure it's totally flat. The times when we have to physically take a piece of metal and flatten it out. After that, we're ready to make the shin. We know exactly where the shin wants to be because there's a drawn out red shape of a shin in the exact place where we want it to go. Then there are two different mahalchim how to make the shin. In a lot of the very cheap places who don't have time to sit and make a shin and they just want to be yotze saying that it's kosher, they do the whole shin like this one time. On the piece over here, it's missing part of the shin. So it's a puzzle shin, and they finish off that piece by hand, which is kosher according to a lot of shittas. Definitely not mahudr, maybe only b'diavad, but it's kosher. Once we have the shin in the we know where we want to make the shin. The most common method of doing it is called the screwdriver method. It's basically they take the screwdrivers bent into funny shapes, and they push out the shin. It's soft, it's pliable, it's almost like your skin. Without pushing down, if the B'datz Mashkiach sees your hand like this, with your hand down, it's good. He sees your hand like this, which means that you're pushing down into it, the bias is out the door. There's nothing to talk about. You can tell him I didn't put pressure, I didn't do anything, it's out, it's gone. They're going and pushing very gently, and they're pushing the skin. You have to take the word for it that this is the way the Mitzvah is, that's formed, that are written on it. They say when you push it like that, you're not very softly, then the skin comes up from itself in the place where you want it to go. Now those that say there's really a double bump that comes, the second bump is kosher, first one's puzzle. Rabbi Asher's Talmidim hold you could press down far away from the bias and push, and that will create waves that the last one will be coming up in the right place where it's supposed to be. That's called Chakireches. It's a whole sugya with a lot of machlokes in exactly how they do it. They're doing it this way has a lot of problems, especially since one of the shins has four heads. There are four sides on that shin. If you can see it, I don't know if you can see it on this, I'll show you in the bias. There are four heads on it. There's not a lot of room to move in between the shins over there. When I first started making batim, we were using the screwdrivers. The nervin wasn't good for my health. So we switched to the needle mahalach. The two needle mahalach. So Ben Sanu Tuflansky, the first person who made batim, he used to literally take a needle, stick it in, make a groove, a raised little mound with it, pull it out the other side. It was not a hole that went into the bias, it was just in the outside layer of the bias. He would leave a piece of thread or gid inside it that left it raised, and that's how we made a shin. The way we do the needles nowadays, it does take a drop longer. There are a lot of different milas in it, besides for nervin. It's basically you have a very sharp thing. You make little holes, you're going in. I have a video if I have time afterwards, I can show you how it's done. You're basically sticking it in and lifting. And you're making around the whole entire bias like that. It takes a little longer. It does come out a much nicer bias and taller bias, and it almost always comes down in the right place. From pushing it with the screwdriver, even if you're not pushing it very hard, a lot of times you shift all the R. And then when you put it back in afterwards to make it look nice with the thing, and you take it out, you have a beautiful shin sticking out, and right next to it, a green shin that's flat. And then you have to start all over again. It moves over. Now, this is an interesting story. I went to a batamacher in Eretz Yisrael once. He's a very good batamacher. He is a Sfardi, so I can forgive him on this, except that he sells to a lot of Ashkenazim also. But he was all proud of his shin guy. He got the shin guy from Rav Pliny's Hashkacha. The guy comes once or twice a week, and he pops out all the shins for him. So I don't trust that Hashkacha. So I made a little face. So he said, I have a video of it. Let me show you. He takes out his phone. He shows it to me. And it was a sight to be seen. The guy had a screwdriver, not as big of a thing like this. It was much flatter. And he was popping out the bias, literally. Straight to the surface. Digging in. Boom. 3-4 minutes a shin, one after another. I couldn't say anything to him. I didn't want. It wasn't my place to say anything to him. But other people knew about it. Half a year ago, one of my friends called me up. Said, I just bought his batim. I have to tell a funny story. He said after he was watching in these factories, they do it. You know, one guy's putting it in the press the first time and marking it, and the next guy's taking out the shins, and the next guy's putting it in the press again to make it look nice. He said, I'm watching the guy put it back in the press to make it look nice, and he takes them off. Every single bias was off. I mean, the part that was sticking out was not the colored part. I mean, it was a straight chak teichishin. After all their hard work, weren't getting anything. So he told the guy, it's a joke. I don't think you should play basketball. Your aim is not so good. The guy said, me, my aim's perfect. I'm putting it in. It lines up perfectly. I'll do it. The guy who made the shin, he doesn't know what he's doing. And that's how they went on. Lamaisi, when he sells the Sfaradim, it's fine. There's no halachic, no halachic issue. When he sold Ashkenazim, it's an issue. Yeah, that's on the shins. After the shins, it's basically, it goes what they call the schnitzeln. These are the more complicated parts. Schnitzeln, I don't know why, but that's what it's called schnitzeln. They basically take the bias.
Somebody's hungry.
There was no schnitzeln. They take the bias, they break it open like this. And now, as well as they worked on the presses to do everything, each bias ends up being different in some way. They know the measurement of how big they want the bias to be. If let's say it's a 32 from front to back, they want the sides to be 32 millimeters, everything's in millimeters and centimeters. They want the sides to be also 32, which means that you want each bias to be 8 millimeters around. So sometimes ones are drop bigger, ones are drop smaller. They break it open, they put it on a stand like this, and they start schnitzeling away at it. With the good places, do it physically with a filer or a sandpaper mounted on a board, or for some parts they use a Dremel piece, but it's mostly done by hand with the entire time the guy is sitting and measuring every piece, every bit of it. We're going in tenths of millimeters a lot of times just to make sure all around it's even. You got to do it. The cheaper places, they have a sanding disc mounted onto the wall. They just take, open it up like this, put it on, and zzz, like that, and it's beautiful. Which in itself is better, not a problem. You don't always get the even bias that you wanted. But after this is done, it goes to be checked for holes. Because it's been cut around, everything, now it's time to check holes. You have very powerful light, and every part from the outside, inside, top, bottom, everything is, any hole on the outside of the bias is right out the door. It's gone. The Chazon Ish did hold at a hole on the outside of the bias that gets closed up again in the press is kosher. We don't go. In Bnei Brak, I know the people that go with Atchila. If anybody's buying Bata from Bnei Brak, most of the world, Rabbi Yashiv, everybody does not go with that. And as soon as there's a hole on the outside of a bias, it's gone. In between the bottom, if there's one hole in one bias, it's Be'etzim Mehuder. Most of the good Ashkachas will not allow it to go through. Because they're always worried there's going to be a second hole. Second hole, depending where it is, could be a problem also. Holes down in between the bottom, on the bottom, or in between over here. A lot of times you get a hole when you stick down those metal sheets. When you're doing the presses, a lot of times it eats away at it a little. You get a hole over there. That place in the Machmir, Rabbi Asher was extremely makel on it. As long as it's not halfway of the whole wall in between the bias, he held his kosher mehuder, and a lot of places can go with that also. But again, these are nothing you're ever going to see, probably. It's checked for the holes. When there's a suffix, there are all different methods. They fill it with alcohol, they fill it with spirit. He's asking, how do you check for holes when there's a suffix? It's fibery, sometimes you can see the light coming through, but you're not sure if it's a real hole or not. And sometimes there's nothing to do. If you stick a needle through it, is a hole, right? Alcohol will go through paper. Most batamachers go, if the alcohol drips right through within a second or two, then it's kosher. If it takes 3-4 seconds, I'm sorry, if it drips right through, then it's possible. Take 3-4 seconds, that means it wasn't a hole because it just had to go through the fibers. He asked one guy, how do you know if there's a hole? He said, whatever is misupik, he puts the shtoib, the powder, on top, and he blows from the bottom. And if he sees everything flying, then he knows. And for some reason, he never ever found the hole whenever he was masupik. Okay, that's they check for the holes. After the holes, comes to gluing. Now, gluing is a whole shiloh by itself. Everybody has prudus. Everybody's batim are prudus. No one ever tell you that the batim are not prudus. What does prudus mean? The batim are supposed to be prudus in between each bias. It's supposed to be separate. Now, when they glue it, since there's so many folds all underneath, you have to glue all those, and you want to make sure the glue doesn't go up. So now those that go the extra mile and they put a very thin piece of metal coated with Vaseline down between the bottom, They glue everywhere they want to glue. They leave it in the press, make sure the glue is dry, pull out the mechitzas, and there's no chance that glue rose up. Now, those that they have very good ideas, they put Vaseline or oil or something over here. And most of them, it doesn't work. Some batamakas, there are very good batamakas that do it, and then could slide anything right down it, and they do work. There's shticks on how to do it. But a lot of places don't do it, and a lot of hashkafas don't check. So they end people end up with gula batam. The halacha, we paskin that if there's a drop of glue in the middle, between each bias, not along the edges. Meaning you stick something down the sides and stick something on top, on the lower third, in between on the bottom, according to all the pricing nowadays, that's called prudis. We don't call prudis a gamri, but it's prudis, mishpura says you can do a chathila. As a matter of fact, a lot of big batamachas in Eretz Yisrael, whoever thinks are doing straight out prudis a gamri, straight down to the bottom, if they're sending film to America, they're always nervous. They don't want to have to hear back from Americans. They don't want to, they're sending it overseas. The humidity and everything is different here than it is over there when they made it, and the bias might react differently to it. A lot of them will put that drop of glue down at the bottom. Should they tell, should they not tell? That's mishpat rov. I don't know. But the halacha, it's considered kosher chatchila and moholim. There's no pikpok. It's not shpitz moholim. After it's glued up, it's... If there's a mikshah, everybody wants mikshah, but chassidim is one of the biggest inyanim out there. Rabbi Yashiv and Shmuel Vosner famously said, I heard it from many of their, both of their talmidim, mikshah is by the menorah and by nothing else. No dim mikshah by thing. What is mikshah? A good bias comes down to heaven over here. This closes up to here. It just closes up and everything is kabbalic. On the one over there. There's a mixture bias. It closes beautifully. There's nothing under here. There's nothing above here. It closes. It's a nice thick guard. This is from a big private batamacher. A very good one. And it's this is the way it is. Now, because on the factories, a lot of times they're using thinner iris. It's easier to work with thinner iris. And they work quicker, and the workmanship not always as good. And they're scared that the bottom might eventually start opening. They put another piece over here that's called a fitter. I should have one with it. Yeah, out of the way. It's just basically, it's a cut-out piece of leather, of ur. Same ur, has to be kosher, has to be ibud l'shma, has to do the same halachas of tefillin. And there's a square cut-out in it that you get the parshas in, it's glued to the top. And that's usually extra... chizuk for the tefillin that it shouldn't open up, hold it flat. Now, the poskim all hold that the in your shonim ready to bring down, especially when they made dakis, it's impossible to wear tefillin like this. You have to have fitters in it. You have to have extra pieces in it. They used to put on the bottom and on the top, and they close it. That was the thickness of it. There is a big movement, especially in the chassidish belt. There's a big thing to get mixture. So what? Yeah, Chabad don't know what to make dakis. This comes from this guy in Crown Heights. He makes an extremely mohoder dakis, but they don't last too long. They do not last too long. Dakis are not meant for everyday use, every single day. For
how long do they
last? It depends. Some of them work. Altang, Crown Heights. So he makes unbelievable dakis. But again, they don't. Ramosha, the Lavav Shavad used to switch their tefillin every couple of years. They're saying they're amol. They had to. Their tefillin weren't as expensive. His, because he's one of the few people left doing it on in a mahuder way, his tefillin costs as much as gasses. But generally, dakis are much cheaper. They put the fitter piece in on the more expensive batim. They don't have mixture. If a guy knows what he's doing and he has the right iron, he does it right. There's no reason for him to put a fitter in, an extra piece in. If a guy doesn't know what he's doing and he doesn't put the piece in, the device is going to be destroyed after a short while. So that's most of the cheap batim have it. In Eretz Yisrael, some of the factories, in order to get around, they don't want to call, not mixture, since people want mixture, they call mixture alf, mixture base. Mixture alf is the spitz mixture, which means that the whole thing is made out of one piece, there's no added piece. And mixture base is the mahuder type that has one piece over there. But that's just the way of doing it. There's no, I was. There are bottom I was involved when I first started. They tried to convince me to do a total mixture without an extra piece. I said, I can't take a price. I'm a factory. I want to make batim that are going to last. I don't want them being coming apart. After that is the, okay, so devik ben batim. So there are batim achers that end up putting in between, whether on purpose or not. You have to understand a lot of them, they do it in the press. The press can have 2,000 pounds of pressure.